Welcome to the UFO File Show.
Mysterious sky, Soviet UFO phenomenon continues. Hi, this is Jerry Pippin, and we're doing another show about UFO sightings in the Russian Empire. Paul Stonehill on the line from the Southern California area in Los Angeles. Paul, how are you?
Good. How are you, Jerry?
Good. Now, you've been a busy fellow since the last time we've talked. You've written a couple more books.
For certain, one more that was published last year.
Yeah. Now, I guess this new book out, is that the one that deals with the Soviet astronomers and their observations?
We've got Philip Mantle, my co-author, and myself. We have information from astronomers, cosmonauts, detailed information about Soviet so-called secret program to study UFOs via academicians and military entities. So we've got quite a lot covered in that book.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of that. Are you talking about the Sitka research? Is that what we're talking about?
Absolutely. The Sitka research program had a few other names, Horizont, Galactica, but the essence was the same. Soviets were alarmed about UFO waves and sightings by general population, and they wanted to find out the effects of the objects on their military.
Now you have been, in America for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the UFO experiences that you've read about and heard about here and in the Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe, They all seem to be similar.
Somewhat. There are some differences.
Oh really? Like, for what?
Prevalence of so-called unusual clouds, whether it be black immobile clouds or so-called silvery clouds sighted over the Soviet Union, which could be explained in a large amount of cases by military experiments, but not all cases could be explained away. Otherwise, you're right. Most of the sightings and experiments and experiences are more or less, comparable.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned the storm clouds, these dark clouds, and you kind of offhandedly referred to weather research. So the Soviet Union's doing basically the same thing we do, tampering around with the weather, you figure?
Well, let's say the Soviet Union has been doing, because I'm not nowadays, but, from what I see, they do go on various different research programs. The Soviets apparently have been playing with weather.
And, we've done several shows about that, and we want to talk to you about the things in your book, but I wanted to bring that out and get you to give me a view about their weather research, because it seems this is going on several places.
Well, apparently. So Soviets, for example, were quite interested in so-called cloud seeding experiments and also so-called plasma experiments, and that could be, we still don't have all the details, which is no tip of the iceberg. But they were quite extensive. For example, Kola Peninsula area and a few other areas in the Soviet Union.
And let's talk a little bit about the nuclear situation. I know it's similar. UFOs are seen over nuclear installations here, but you have a lot of evidence about it in Russia, right?
Right, and we could talk about a pattern of attraction. Russia, the Soviet Union was a close totalitarian society. And, they had many more sinister experiments, let's say, put it that way, or more complex military experiments, perhaps, than here, and they wanted to keep it all away from prying eyes. So UFOs that had appeared over Soviet nuclear installations and secret silos and so forth were buzzing constantly, and by that time, the Russians knew they were not dealing with Americans. There came a point where they knew not to attack UFOs that would come to the secret installation. Let them be. They pose no threat. There's nothing we can do.
Well, was there any evidence that they had tried to attack the UFOs?
Yes. In the book, we go through a number of cases. But, for example, one of the interesting cases Sources, very well-known Soviet military scientist who was a prisoner of the Gulag. Well, there was a case in 1953 when the Soviets tried to shoot down a giant mothership, cigar-shaped object over the Taiga area where they had secret installations and research institutes. And Stalin just died not long ago. They couldn't come to a complete decision, but when they finally did come to a decision to shoot it down, when they blinked, they lost a number of aircraft. Also, cases that go back to more recent times. Apparently, we've established that after 1965, there was an order given to the Soviet armed forces not to shoot at UFOs, because they did lose a number of aircraft in the early 1960s. Still very secret cases. Apparently, somebody did not listen and did try to shoot down a UFO, I believe, in 1978, not far from Iraq-Iran border, within the Soviet Union. And they lost, a number of aircraft and missiles, and this military commander was demoted. What's interesting, Jerry, is something that is fascinating, because in late 1980s, during the heady times of Perestroika and Glasnost, a number of top Soviet military commanders came out with revelations that, yes, we see UFOs, sometimes we send airplanes after them, military aircraft, we don't touch them, we know better. But here is an example, for example, they would say, 1990, a gigantic UFO over Moscow, 200 meters in diameter, and for example, they knew it wasn't the Americans. But we give names and dates, because this is very serious. This is very interesting. There are no more revelations today, but at that time, a lot of information came out.
Now, evidently, they lost several aircraft, just like evidently the United States did, especially back there in the 50s. What about, do you have any evidence of any UFOs being impacted at all, or any UFO crashes in Russia or the Soviet Union?
Here is the idea of the book. The book itself presents as much information as possible, and we try to go after credible sources, sources that usually would not talk about UFOs openly, but we try to get, like I said, astronomers, cosmonauts, military people, and trained observers. Some of them mention, for example, Mr. Smirnov in the military encounters chapter. Some of them directly say that yes, a UFO was shut down, and some of the technology had been used by us. Most credible researchers, like Mikhail Gerstein, say that nothing was shut down. It doesn't mean that the Soviets did not have something in their hands, but that something nicely and easily left their clutches. We have a case of the Manchegorsk UFO. Very unusual. 20 years ago, to the date.
Yeah, now Gorbachev was in power during that time, right?
And Mr. Gorbachev, who we should ask, because I understand he's going to be writing columns in the U.S. newspapers. Apparently, he made a detour from his itinerary just to go see this very unusual object, a small shuttle-like object that the Soviets had gotten their hands on in the northern Russian area, not far from what's today St. Petersburg, Leningrad. And they had studied it. They managed to get inside. It's a very unusual craft. And it was made as if for dwarfish, small people, very small people. Very unusual construction. They had some effects on their biological, biological and physiological characteristics, meaning that they had burns on their hands when they put them in.
So they were actually crash victims?
No crash victims.
Oh, okay.
No. And that object had disappeared from their hands after a while. It just disappeared from a hangar where they kept it.
In other words, they put it in a warehouse or a guarded area, and they came back and it was gone.
Yeah, after a while. And of course, it created some interferences with other, technological means. But the point is, this is a very interesting case that still people know very little about, and there's secrecy about this case. But there is enough information to talk about it.
We mentioned Gorbachev. How about, let's all go all the way back to Stalin. Did he have any stories about UFOs, or was he involved in anything with UFOs?
I'll be brief and concrete. two cases. First of all, Stalin knew about Roswell incident. Apparently Soviet agents had delivered enough information to him to get his interest aroused. He called in top Soviet scientists, names given, dates given, and he said, "I want your assessment. You stay in Kremlin. Here's a nice interpreter for you, translator. You go through these documents. You give me your assessment." Well, the assessment from people like Korolev, father of Soviet space science, was UFOs, yes, they do exist, and no, they're not a threat to our security, of our nation. So they had enough to look at. And Stalin asked Keldysh, another academician, and a few other people, same assessment. And that's one case about Stalin. Something else. He himself was quite interested in, let's say, space phenomena and space exploration, to the point that in 1945, during the Potsdam Conference, how to divide Europe after Nazis were crushed, he talked about moon. Of all the places, he said, "Well, how are we going to take care of the moon?"
Yeah, who's going to get that? Take care of that? I mean, whose territory will that be?
Absolutely. Something else. We give indications that Stalin was keenly interested in moon exploration, and possibly there was a research institute not far away from my native city, Kiev, that was created in late 1930s. Things were being done there, but before Nazis entered that area, equipment was evacuated to the Urals, and everything was burned down. The only thing is, you got to understand, this is exactly what Chernobyl was, the nuclear power plant, many years later.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about that, and the Chernobyl incident, we know UFOs have been watching nuclear power plants. I wonder how that got by them. In other words, how that actually happened. I mean, you know, it looks like they would have intervened there.
Well, first of all, by itself, Chernobyl was a case of Soviet neglect and stupidity. And the site of the Ukrainian version of FBI has enough documents about what the Soviets were messing with in Chernobyl and how they screwed up. The problem is not that. Not the problem. The issue was when the fourth reactor blew up, there were witnesses that we present in our book that say, here is, we saw a fiery sphere, UFO, over the explosion site, and actually it diminished the effect of the explosion.
So in other words, they did try to do something.
They tried to do something, and this is a pattern you will see in the book, and generally through this history of Soviet ufology. I think Earth would have been in a much worse shape had there not been interference from so-called UFOs. For example, there is a case I often mention of a lake, Sarez, in Central Asia. It's a very strange lake. It's up on the mountains. If a dam that holds it ever breaks, billions of tons of water will come down, and there'll be very few things left in Afghanistan. Well, apparently the Soviets had a special station to spy on U.S. satellites, SDI program, and they had enough technology to observe the lake and see gigantic UFOs coming in and out from the water of that lake. What is it that they were doing there?
That brings up our previous discussion. We talked about the swimmers. Remember that? Yeah, the swimmers swimming in the water, UFO or ETs under underground bases.
Well, here's the thing. 1982, and since we talked, I've got more proof, and actually it's going to get published in Fate magazine, and there is enough in the book as well. In 1982, apparently Soviets found out that there are deep water lakes like Baikal had a very unusual gigantic humanoid beings going about their business, clad in something like silvery outfits, like suits, and doing what they need to do. Soviets were alarmed. You know, they had strategic assets there. They tried to catch those swimmers, and in the process, they lost a number of their frogmen because the way it was done was stupid and irresponsible. And an order through the armed forces not to touch such swimmers anymore, and also a bulletin from the engineering forces came down saying, "Look, we have such cases in other bodies of water. We have a lot of UFOs that we observe, and you need to know about this and that." I found out later, not that long ago, that one of the best one of the best and knowledgeable people in the Soviet Union and Russia, Mikhail Demidenko, who himself was a Stalin interpreter in Chinese and who had seen Tibet and a few other places. Very smart guy, very intelligent. He was in Siberia in about 1986, and not far from Lake Baikal, where this allegedly happened, he met with local people who told him a story of this Soviet frogman being tossed out from the water. Very unusual story. So he didn't know anything about the 1982 case for about 10 years more. And then he compared his notes. But I have more. Apparently, in 1982, according to the Sietka program, a gigantic being was sighted and reported through the channels of this program by somebody who is still alive. He's a scientist. And one of the top, I think it was one very, very operational on that Sietka program, Ермолаев. Well, he reported this incident that Soviet military man saw a gigantic being running away, and the description fits, you know, to the night.
The gigantic being, I wonder how big.
Well, 3.5 meters. So, you know, let's what are we looking at? 8, 9 feet?
Yes. So, larger than the population of the Earth, for sure.
For sure. More. We do have more information about such beings. And, you know, as, you know, more research goes through, I think there'll be more confirmation.
You know, we talk about these, underground and underwater sightings. Don't you write about something called Serez Lake in your book?
Well, we just talked about it not long ago. That Lake Serez is the one in the Central Asia area.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was getting at. So, is your evidence that these underwater beings, they're in freshwater only, or are they?
No, one of the chapters in that book, in our book, Mysterious Sky, deals with the sort of secrets of Russian seas and, you know, oceans, but not Russian only. They had submarines all over the place, and there are very interesting cases, like a 1965 case not far from the U.S. waters. They were on a rendezvous with somebody, and they saw a gigantic, unusual cigar-shaped object over the waters of the Atlantic Ocean, and the description is, you know, I don't want to say terrifying, but it's fascinating at the same time. There is quite a lot, not only in the Soviet waters, but specifically in the waters of the Soviet Union, because that's what our subject. And what's interesting is the so-called cigar-shaped gigantic object, that, you know, the one that was almost, that they tried to shoot down in 1953. Well, we have there is a confirmation of a very similar object sighted by Soviet submarines, military submarines, over faraway areas of the Pacific Ocean. Same description.
So the craft that you see in the air can also be seen under the water.
Well, it probably enters the water and exits. There's quite a lot of information about objects that shoot out from, you know, under the sky of, I'm sorry, from under the surface of the ice-bound seas up to the sky. There we have information about UFOs actually coming to the Soviet secret naval bases and hovering over it and doing whatever they want, and Soviets could not do anything. Again, they knew better than to shoot it down.
They learned the hard way that they probably shouldn't be doing that, and I guess we did too. If you read between the lines of some of these reports, I mean, at least that's kind of the opinion I get. How about you?
I think it's all over the world. You know, we had that case in Argentina in 1960 that the Soviets were interested in. Also, gigantic USOs under the water. Argentinians tried to get them out. They could not. I know that U.S. military airplane was on its way and there was a crash. Khrushchev was very much interested in that case. He was still in power. So it's universal. It's not only Russia.
How did you, talking about universal, how did you get connected up with Philip Mantle? He's in the UK.
Well, first of all, Philip Mantle, well known by people who have good connections and knowledge in the former Soviet Union. Philip was actually instrumental in a way in the Voronezh case. And there is a lot more about the Voronezh in the book because, you know, it just was the tip of the iceberg. So we wrote to each other for years, and then he wrote to me back about, I would say, 9 years ago, and he told me there was a book that a publisher wanted to produce, and that's how the Soviet UFO files came about. And then we decided to write and update a large volume, let's say, of that deals specifically with the Soviet Union, UFOs, but also some other phenomena that or space disasters related to so-called alien, civilizations.
Are you and Philip going to do another book, or are you going to do one by yourself? Oh, you.
I just want some by myself through Fate magazine, hopefully. It's the deal with paranormal Eurasia. Because there's so much.
You and I talked about that ghost train. Remember that?
The ghost train?
Yes, in far eastern Europe, that legend. It was in a show we talked about a long time ago about talking about paranormal legends, and I don't remember the name of the country now. I'm sorry, but or it would ring a bell with you, I'm sure. But the point was, there's lots of paranormal legends in Eastern Europe,
and
in Asia too.
Absolutely, and especially Asia. I want people to know more about Far East, about Mongolia, China. There are so many fascinating areas, and Russian side of that part of the world. There's so much to learn and find out. But even Eastern Europe and Central Russia, it's just because people. Again, how much do we know about Brazil? Well, there are people that bring out that information, and we exchange it. Maybe we can see patterns.
A lot of interesting things have happened in Brazil, for sure, and all over the world. One thing I'm very curious about, since you write about paranormal things, too, do you think there's a connection between paranormal and UFO, or is just we don't understand either?
I think we don't understand what we're dealing with. And we being just civilians, that's understandable. There's only so much a person can do. A person works, a person has other duties, family life, and there's only so much time we can dedicate. Sometimes we find out pearls or golden nuggets, but I'm sure those who studied continuously, hopefully there are governmental programs that do so, and army programs. Maybe they have a more complex picture, and definitely they know more.
Well, we hear about the CIA and their research, and the OKGB. I imagine they did some paranormal research.
Actually, we have a whole, part of the book deals with CIA files that have been declassified, and it's fascinating how they spied on the Soviets and the information they had in their hands about UFOs in the Soviet Union. I can only imagine what's in the other files. I'll just quickly finish. KGB itself, they had to collect information about UFOs when it was sent to them by their informers. But per se, I doubt that this was their mission. They had other things to worry about.
The CIA evidently did a lot of mind control programs and ESP and psychics coming in and remote viewing. Did the KGB do that too?
Well, absolutely. But then again, you take it with a grain of salt. A lot of it was just, like the KGB. They were fooled by people with keen minds who used it to take money out of the state, so forth, to put it in their pocket. There were a lot of fakes. And I'm sure they had some very interesting discoveries, but to the extent of groundbreaking, no. I don't think they have. In my personal opinion, they had in their hands such a wonderful psychic as Messing. And I've written about him in Fate magazine, a wonderful mind who didn't know his powers. But he begged them to study his powers. But because of ideology, the Soviets were limited. Well, if it's not Marxism-Leninism, we have to be very careful. So I think they kind of tripped themselves in many instances. If they had such complete mind power and so, they wouldn't lose. Communism would have survived, Soviet-style communism, but they lost miserably.
Well, we talk about lots of different things, and you're getting into this next project on Eurasia, and in one of those books, you talked about that ghost train of Eurasia, and also talked about, I think, unusual creatures, you know, cryptozoology. Bigfoot, is that prevalent in Europe and Russia and behind the Iron Curtain?
Well, that's not Europe. I would say hard-to-reach areas of maybe northern Russia.
Uh-huh.
But Europe itself, no, they would have destroyed this creature, those creatures. And, you know, in the book, in my book, I'm going to cover quite a lot testimonies that go back, I would say, about 1,000 years plus from the areas of the... China, Russia, Siberia, and also areas close to the Caspian Sea, and testimonies of travelers who were not into fairy tales, but actually were very responsible to write down information. Like there was an Arab traveler, there was a mission from Baghdad Caliphate to the southern areas of Russia, and he actually saw bones of the gigantic creature that had been living humanoid at the time. The local king killed it, and bones were preserved. What's interesting is that it corresponds to legends of the beings like that terrorizing ancient China. This is one of the reasons they built the wall, by the way. Not the makeup wall that they built under Mao Zedong. I'm talking about the ancient wall. And also testimonies of how creatures like that have been used by the Russian army of the time, different from today, used to in battles. So maybe we go back to the Goliath legend in a way. You know, creatures big as Goliath.
I understand what you're saying. Lots of intriguing things, that, and the more you dig into it, the more things you find.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit. We're about out of time. We only have a half hour here, but. Tell me a little bit more about your book here, the one that's out now with Philip.
Well, the book is called Mysterious Sky Soviet UFO Phenomenon, and you can get it on the Amazon.com.
Right, and we have a link to get it there, so from Amazon. So that's good. People can click onto it. The book covers the basic things we've been talking about?
It covers from the very ancient times on to the... actually to more recent times as well, even past the disintegration of the Soviet Union. We present information about Soviet and Russian data on UFOs research.
Do you have anything in there about Nazi discs? And
yeah, there's quite a lot. There's information. Nazis had a program when they were trying to create disc-like objects, and I don't think Hitler took it seriously based on, you know, information we have. And Soviets knew about this. They might have captured, there is some information coming nowadays that they've captured technology. They just didn't do anything with it. I think they did more with the rockets than with disc-like technology. So Nazis were quite interested, absolutely. And what's more interesting is the information about German scientists who were moved to the Urals and who were participating in Soviet programs to create disc-like craft. And I got to tell you, Soviets, they had studied possibilities of using disc-like gigantic crafts for transportation purposes. And, you know, maybe someday we will use it. There's nothing secret about it.
And when you do your research, are they working on alternative power sources, too, just like we seem to be? I mean, these crafts seem to... to defy what we can do.
Absolutely, I'm sure. Russia today has gotten up from their knees. Let me put it down this way. Because under Yeltsin, they had chaos. Under Putin, they have a more organized country. And you know, I'm not going to get into politics. I really, you know, don't care about it. Ukraine is where I'm from, and it's a different state. But looking at the recent development, how many people have seen information about Russia and China planning to go to Mars and Phobos in 2009? Well, to me, this is astounding, because one of the chapters in our book, and a very well-researched chapter, I got it, you know, I'm very proud of it, deals with the Soviet Phobos program of 1988 when two probes were sent to Mars and Phobos. One of them perished on its way. The other one was destroyed when it got to the Mars orbit, apparently by a gigantic object, another cigar-shaped object, 20 kilometers long. And this was a very interesting case. Why, you know, I'm proud of our research is because we went through the Soviet newspapers of the period, and again, during Glasnost, and you could see how Soviet scientists were, you know, it was about what it could be. And there is much more information than available anywhere else. And what's important is that Soviet probe apparently shortly, maybe a month later, and then was gone. If we don't know where it came from. And what's interesting, it was an international undertaking. Soviet scientists, together with Americans, NASA, JPL, Europeans, and East Europeans, created this program called Phobos. Well, today we have the same, except it's Russia and China who are placing together new technology.
So you think, Paul, we're probably not being told the truth about what really is happening around Mars. Maybe we don't know.
Well, I'll tell you more. In the book, we give opinion of somebody who should be listened to, Professor Burdakov, one of the top Russian scientists, who was always outspoken about UFOs and had keen interest. And this guy is, you know, I would put it on the same level like Sagan and a few others in the world. Well, he said, after he learned what was going on with that program and how it perished, he said, why were we even sending the program there? With the experiments we had in mind to use lasers on Martian surface, if there is intelligent being, civilization out there, they wouldn't like it. We wouldn't like if somebody came to probe our planet. He knew maybe more than he said, but again, this is the same gentleman whom we used, and his testimonies about very unusual findings in the Soviet Union, and I want to mention it because it's very important. He told the story how in 1950s Soviet academicians were given an object to research and again to give their assessment, and what is this object, what is the essence. They looked at it, they measured it, they could not understand. Today we know what a microchip looks like.
Good point. Yeah, people can think about that. Our time is up. One final question, Paul. It seems to me everybody's covering up something here. Why are we all covering it up? I mean, the United States, Russia, we seem to be... there doesn't seem to be any openness about this all of a sudden.
Well,
I mean, there was for a little while there in Russia, as you mentioned, with Glasnost, but... It all seems like it's slamming shut.
Well, it's slamming shut because, first of all, there's still the, you know, there's always the superpower race. And, you know, Russia may not be a superpower today, but it wants to be. Plus, we don't know the extent of the cooperation that may exist. Because to me, this Russian-Chinese program is very telling. China is not a friend of Russia. They have relations, but they're also competitors. And yet they want to go together to space. So there may be a cooperation, and they may possess knowledge, by they I mean, you know, those in power, that is maybe too dangerous to reveal to us, in their mind, because it could shake the backbone of the civilization, religion, beliefs, and maybe that's one of the reasons that the information is not being revealed.
Your book is fascinating. You cover a lot of these questions you're just asking in the book, Mysterious Sky, Soviet UFO Phenomena. Philip Mantle and Paul Stonehill. Paul, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk again.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduzi. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio, and let's find the answers together.
Click on Pharaoh's banner for the answers to the most personal questions.